Tell to all my friends that all of my issues, it's a me, Mario. Woohoo! Mamma mia! You guys, you're number one. Woohoo! Are you number one? Ho ho! Wait a second, bro. Here we go. Woohoo!
Hello, Internet, and welcome to another episode of All My Issues. In this episode, episode 21, we talk about good, bad movies. But before we get into that, let's talk about Geek Fuel. Geek Fuel, if you're anything like us, and let's face it, if you're listening to this podcast, you probably are. You enjoy geeky things, and one of the best ways to get your monthly geek on is to subscribe to Geek Fuel. Geek Fuel will send you a box monthly filled with comic book, gaming, sci-fi, and pop culture-related material. Right now, if you go to our website, allofmyissues.com, and click the Geek Fuel link, you can save $3 off of your Geek Fuel subscription. Use those $3 to buy one of the movies we're going to talk about, because it's probably going to be in the bargain bin. All right, let's get started. I'm Rick.
I'm Sam.
I'm Chris.
All right, and today we're going to talk about something a little bit different, I guess. You know, there are bad movies, and then there are good bad movies. So today we're going to talk about the good bad movies. And maybe we'll throw one in as a cautionary tale, but we're going to pretty much just focus on the good bad movies. So, who wants to get started?
I'll go.
All right.
When we were looking at this, just to kind of explain our methodology, we were looking at movies that were critically panned when they came out, but that had enough redeeming qualities, whether it might be, in the case of some of these, that they're just honestly terrible movies, but they're really fun to watch. Some of them are actually pretty decent movies that, for whatever reason, critics didn't like. I would say none of our choices are probably perfect movies.
I would agree
but,
with that.
But all of them have redeeming qualities. And so that out of the way, my number five is Boondock Saints.
Oh, yeah. That is a very good film.
Receives a 20%.
Are you kidding me?
On Rotten Tomatoes.
I can't believe it's that low.
The movie came out in 1999, written and directed by... a man named Troy Duffy, stars Sean Patrick Flannery and Norman Reedus as fraternal twin brothers living in, I believe, Boston. Mm-hmm. And they get wrapped up in some intrigue involving the Russian mob, I guess you would say. And one thing leads to another, and they just decide to kind of rid the city of evil. Some of the things that I like about it is it's ridiculously violent at times, but it's also very funny.
And
it's probably the only time in a movie where someone has ever shot a cat that I actually thought would be funny, because I'm a cat person. I like cats, but yeah. William Dafoe, mm-hmm, as FBI agent Paul Smecker just nails it in so many ways, makes some interesting choices. My favorite of which is where he's reenacting where there was some violence beforehand, and he just, for no perceptible reason that I can think of, goes, "There was a firefight!" it just is really good. And it's a lot of fun. Another shout out is to Billy Connolly, who plays Il Duce, a con man, and I guess spoilers. I mean, whatever. If you haven't seen Boondock Saints by now, you're probably not going to.
And but you should go see.
You should.
Yeah.
He's hired to take out the Saints, and then does not.
Wow. Okay.
At the end, because it's revealed as they're standing over their fallen friend, saying their family prayer, he basically comes in and can finish it because it's his family prayer too. He's their long missing father. So, and then they go and read crime together. So, and I found it interesting that Boondock Saints 2 All Saints Day has a higher Rotten Tomato rating than the first one.
Get out of here. I didn't even realize there was a sequel.
Yeah, oh, there's a sequel. And I don't believe it's as good as the first. They're making another one, too, from what I understand.
Wow.
Yep. But it gave us... It was one of the first times I think I'd ever seen Norman Reedus.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny that you mentioned that because when The Walking Dead came out and Norman Reedus became this thing...
Mm-hmm.
I recognized him, and I was like, what do I recognize him from? And I had to IMDb him, and I discovered, oh, he's from Boondock Saints. Yeah. So that's how I knew of Norman Reedus.
So if you would like, and then the other brother was played by Sean Patrick Flannery. If you would like to see Daryl Dixon and Powder shoot a bunch of Russian people, then by all means.
And who wouldn't want to see that, exactly. Right?
I would actually kind of like to see it remade with those two, as those characters.
As those characters.
Instead of brothers.
With the bow and arrow and everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, Sam, do you want to go next then?
Sure.
All right.
All right, my number five is actually a sequel. It is Grown Ups 2. It came out in 2013. Starring Adam Sandler, Chris Rock, Kevin James, and basically most of the Saturday Night Live cast making cameos. You know, Shaquille O'Neal was in it and everything. And for me, the Rotten Tomatoes had gave it a 7% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's pretty low.
That's pretty low. So, you know... But it's one of my it makes me laugh, and I think it's better than the original. Because when I first saw the original, I saw Grown Ups, the first one, I just thought, oh, Adam Sandler just got a bunch of his friends, and they are basically just sitting around, kind of making jokes how the 80s was better than any other decade. So I was like, it's okay. So when Grown Ups 2 came out, I think I seen it at the drive-in because it was with another movie. So I was like, what the heck? I paid for it already. And I truly enjoyed it because I thought it was a lot funnier than the first Grown Ups. And maybe because Rob Schneider wasn't in it, maybe that kind of helped him. And maybe because Shaq was in it.
Hating on Rob Schneider.
And I just love Taylor Lofton was in it also from the Twilight movies.
Yes.
And
the
there's like
werewolf
Jacob.
Dude. Yeah. Jacob, yes, that's it.
And
yes.
Like the
I don't know
the...
why I knew that.
We found your issue.
We found an issue has been found.
That's my wife's issue.
And like one of the greatest like all out fight scenes was between the frat house and, you know, Adam Sandler and all his buddies having this big gigantic fight at the end of at a party at the end of the movie, and it just goes bananas, and I just thought it was it was hilarious. So, Grown Ups 2 is my number 5 pick.
All right, Grown Ups 2.
I've only seen the first one. I only vaguely was aware that a Grown Ups 2 existed, to be honest with you. So, I think Adam Sandler movies get a bad rap in general.
Yeah.
I think maybe he's overly criticized.
I think so too, because I think they kind of consider him like every Adam Sandler movie to be, you know, he plays Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
Right.
So, but I don't think that's necessarily true though.
No, not if you saw what
Punch
is
Drunk
it?
Love.
Love Rain Over Me.
Spanglish.
I don't think I've seen Love.
Rain Over Me. Oh gosh, it's a dark comedy set in the shadow of 9/11.
Oh, man.
Like his whole family died in 9/11 or something.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's a strange movie to watch, but he really good in it.
Huh. Yeah, see, I think he has more range than people give him credit for.
Yeah. Right. I think what it is my personal opinion is he's become insanely wealthy, and he likes to share with his friends, and so he makes movies with his friends all the time, and then they get lots of money.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, hey, we're having fun.
Can't say that I wouldn't do the same thing in his shoes.
Indeed.
I don't think he takes himself as serious as some of these other people in Hollywood. He's just like, hey, I'm going to make this movie.
Well, and I think he knows, I mean, a lot of people like what he does. He's I mean, I don't want to say this as badly, but he's kind of like Nickelback in that way. You know what you're getting from an Adam Sandler movie. You know what you're getting from Nickelback. And yeah, while a lot of people don't like it, clearly a lot of people do.
That is true. I mean,
is Adam Sandler Canadian? I don't think he is.
Maybe Nickelback's more the Kevin James, the James. Paul Blart Mall Cop.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah,
could be.
All right, I guess that brings us to my number five, and quite honestly, I'm not really sure how Rotten Tomatoes comes up with their figures. It seems like some weird mathematical equation they must use, because I'm not sure.
My next turn, I'll discuss.
We'll discuss. Okay.
My issue. Oh, your issue with Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay, that sounds good, because this movie, I can't really say why I like it. I just kind of do, and it scored kind of high actually on Rotten Tomatoes, which kind of surprises me. It actually got a 58%.
So close to fresh.
So close to fresh. So close.
You could almost feel the freshness.
You could. That tomato was almost right.
It's got some spots.
It's got some spots.
We could, if we cut off some of those spots,
and we would have had.
We would have had just an okay tomato.
An okay tomato. There you go. But the movie that I'm talking about is Prince of Darkness. John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness has Donald Pleasance in it. He's pretty much the main actor in it. And there's a few other actors as well. Victor Wong is in it. He was from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
You know, another John Carpenter film. Mm. And in fact, I believe this film was made directly after Big Trouble in Little China. And,
was it really?
Yeah, and John Carpenter had kind of a bad experience, I guess, doing Big Trouble in Little China because of it being kind of more of a big budget type thing. So he didn't have as much control over it as he wanted to. So he tried to go more of a small budget indie kind of route and came out with this movie, which you can kind of tell when you watch it, but it definitely has some of the John Carpenter elements to it, I think, which make it interesting to watch. Like I said, I'm not sure if it's really a good movie. What drew me to the film when it came out was Alice Cooper being in the film. And in fact, his face is kind of emblazoned on some of the movie posters for this film. But in all actuality, he has like 5 seconds of screen time or something like that. So he's not really in it for very long. And you know, I think they kind of oversold it with him on the movie poster, to be quite honest. But regardless, the premise of the movie, it's about these scientists finding this weird tube of this green fluid that's just kind of floating around inside of this abandoned church. And they're kind of doing experiments on it, and just weird things begin to happen. Homeless people start showing up at the church, trying to prevent them from leaving the church. And to make a long story short, it's kind of alluding to Satan, the Prince of Darkness, being brought back into our world, and everybody's having weird dreams and stuff. And it doesn't really end satisfactorily in any way, because there's no resolution to the film. I guess that maybe that's a little bit of a spoiler. But for some reason, I still kind of like it, just the way the story kind of plays out. But yeah, that's my number five.
Okay.
I will say I like John Carpenter. And I really liked, he did, sandwiched in between their Big Trouble in Little China and The Thing and At the Mountains of Madness. So
Escape from New York.
It's interesting that these things are gonna come up over and over again, because we'll be talking about Escape from New York a little later too, probably a little bit, but not the movie itself being on my list. But I guess we'll move over to my number four, which my number four is going to be the 2005 movie Constantine.
Okay.
Which has a 46% approval rating. And while I say that, I'm going to discuss My no, I'll wait for a minute. We'll talk about Constantine for a little bit. Constantine is not without its flaws. And again, I said before that I like Keanu Reeves and anything he does, even if I don't like him in it, because I just think he seems like a pretty nice person. I do not feel that he made the best John Constantine.
Okay.
Because I don't feel he was anything like the comic book character.
Okay.
I like Matt Ryan's Constantine from the television show better than, because he felt, I mean, he wasn't even British in the movie. So, that being said, the plot of Constantine takes a series from the book called Dangerous Habits and changes it considerably. But that was a Garth Ennis run of Constantine.
Okay.
So the idea is that God and Lucifer have a bet for the souls of humans, so tying into Prince of Darkness a little bit.
I love it.
They have a bet for the souls, and the long story short, John Constantine has he committed suicide when he was 15 to escape the visions, because he could see the hybrid angels and demons that were manifested around. He could see them when no one else could. And so he was revived, and the devil was ticked. And so, and then he spent his whole life fighting against that. So the devil has made the comment, or someone makes the comment to Gabriel, makes the comment to him later, that he's the soul that the devil will stop and come to take himself. So, long and short of it, I'm not going to go into all the plot. It's kind of messy and hard to explain. But it ends with... You find out through the course of the show, of the movie, that John Constantine is dying. He has lung cancer. And so when it comes to a head and everything is going to happen, in order to get everything to stop, he slits his own wrists, which pulls Satan, who stops time and kind of walks up to him, and the actor that played him,
Peter Stormare.
Whew,
yeah,
that's my
favorite
portrayal of the devil that I can think of.
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, just played it fantastically.
Yep, absolutely.
I'm only mentioning the way they chose to end this, because it was so drastically different than the way, you know, he gets one wish or whatever because of whatever it was that he did, and it's to save this other lady from hell. And so then when the devil goes to take him to hell, he can't, because now he's done something good. And I like the way they handled it in the comic book a little bit better, because instead of that, John Constantine sold his soul to three different princes of hell, and they all showed up to collect at the same time, and none of them could
lay claim to the soul, kind of. Yeah,
all of them laid claim, none of them would give in to the others, and they realized it would start a war in hell if they tried to take it. So they all just kind of agreed to take away his cancer and let him live for a while until they could figure everything out.
I like that the comic book ending better as well. But I really, you know, being a big Constantine fan myself, I really, you know, despite, you know, some discrepancies in the character, like you had mentioned, where, you know, he's not British.
He's not blonde.
Yeah, he's not blonde. But still called Constantine. I really enjoyed the movie. I thought it was
a good movie. And,
if you can look past those differences.
See, you guys are... I really never read any of the Constantine books.
I knew the
story of it and everything, but I never like read Hellblazer or anything. So when I watched them, I was like, "Oh, I thought it was a good movie." I didn't know Constantine was British. I knew he was blonde, but I didn't know he was British.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, "Oh, okay." I mean, I kind of like it. And with me, the ending, I thought that was just like, that's awesome and everything. Mm, yeah. So I had like a different perspective, and I was like, oh, this is a pretty good movie. Yeah,
I still thought the ending was kind of cool. Yeah.
That's the first time I remember seeing Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And playing jazz.
Yeah.
And
Tilda Swinton is amazing in there as well.
Exactly. Playing Gabriel.
Yeah.
And she's good at those weird ethereal type characters where, you know.
Gavin Rosdale was in there randomly.
I was like,
hey, wait a minute.
It's the guy from Bush. That's weird.
Hey, look, he's got a machine head.
Yeah.
The golden shotgun, the holy shotgun.
The holy shotgun, yeah. That's something that never appeared in the comics, at least to my knowledge, but, you know.
It was a good movie, and I don't feel worthy of the shame of a rotten score, 46%. So now let me discuss real quick my issue with Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
I feel that it's a good way to get a general idea if you might like a movie. But the problem is the way they decide it is if you have 100 reviews and 50 of them are positive and 50 of them are negative, you get a 50%, so it's a rotten score. So movies that might be more challenging or that might polarize an audience based on the choices of the filmmakers are going to receive a lower score than a mediocre movie that everybody kind of likes. So, and there are exceptions, you know, the Toy Stories are notoriously high up on the list, and I think those are all really great movies, yep. And we were mentioning Arrival having a 94%, and some of the other, you know, good movies, but that's wherein they get their score, and I think it leads to
a little bit of skewness on
it leads
that,
to
on
high,
our scale.
High percentages to movies that are pretty good, and low percentages to movies that might be great to a large to a small portion, so I'm curious where some of the classics would have been if they would have used it as the tool then, whereas now they take older movies and they kind of, when they get re-released on DVD, they use those reviews where we're looking at it differently, so
right,
which is the other thing is when I and I know that Rick had the same problem, is I started looking at movies that I thought would be there's no way people like this movie.
Has anyone even seen this film? Yeah. Besides me.
And one of them I looked at, I forget which one it was, had an 85%.
Yeah, I'm like, who are the people watching this?
Yeah. Like I looked up like Dead Alive because I was like, who?
What was the rating on that?
That was the one of the high ones.
Was it really?
It was like, it was in the 80s, I think.
Because I was going to actually look that one up, and I completely forgot about
it. I
that
mean, to have a movie where you're 88% on Rotten Tomatoes, to have a movie where a character eats a German Shepherd, and the dude pulls this skin out of it, and the girl's like, your mother ate my dog, and he's like, not all of it. I mean,
it seemed hard to believe
that 88% of critics love this movie. I mean, it did give birth, you know, help give birth to Peter Jackson, but this movie, but whatever. Anyway, I digress. That was my quattro.
All right, my number four is 1994's A Low Down Dirty Shame.
Oh, man.
With starring Keenan Ivory Wayans and Jada Pinkett. And this movie was about a private eye named, his last name is Shame. He used to be a cop, but he was fired due to pursuing a criminal that he couldn't touch. And so he kind of went against the rules of the precinct, and so they fired him. So a year later, he becomes a private eye, and him and Jada Pinkett have this private eye company, and so he runs into that same criminal again, and there is a lot of money laundering and crooked cops all involved, and the private eye Shame has to solve it all. So this was the first time you saw Keenan Ivory Wayans bald. So from then on, he cut his hair to be bald. So
so give us that.
So I mean, it's not like a great movie, but it is entertaining. And when it does come on television, I do find myself sitting and watching it. So on Rotten Tomatoes, and this movie is this movie, as far as Rotten Tomatoes, got a 0%.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Oh man.
Right. That's impressive.
That is impressive. So you all, that is one of many on my list that has a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. Wow.
You went scraping the bottle of the barrel.
Of the best movies.
And I
was like surprised, like you guys, when we're looking some of these up, and I was like, Lowdown Dirty Shame? I was like, why does it have a 0% on Rotten Tomatoes? And I mean, it's on a list of like a whole bunch of movies that have 0% due to either people watching it and saying zero, or like critics bad with it or something like that. It's amazing. So
that is kind of crazy. Well, I guess my number cuatro is it's not a sequel. It's a threequel, if you will. Superman 3. Oh, yes. Superman 3.
Mm.
Came out in 1983. I know a lot of people have mixed feelings about this
one. No. My feelings aren't mixed. Nope.
And, you know, it's you know, it gave us drunk Superman.
Yeah, it did.
Boy, yeah.
And that's become like a meme at times, I believe. It's, you know, kind of took a little bit of a departure from the Richard Donner Superman that we saw from the previous two films.
Yeah.
You're not going to get my support on this one.
But, yeah.
It had one redeeming quality as far as I'm concerned.
Is that Richard Pryor?
Two. Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor, yeah. The thing that I'm not sure why I really like this movie. I think just because it's one of those things where you grew up and you saw Superman in a movie, and hey, it's Superman in a movie, I gotta like it. I really wish that it would have went a different route.
Yeah, you know,
any other route. Yeah,
the you know, believing that Richard Pryor is a hacker, that's not that much of a stretch of imagination. Creating synthetic kryptonite, still not that much of a stretch of imagination, but. You know, going this whole route where he creates a supercomputer to fight Superman. I wish it would have been more like a Brainiac type thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I know a lot of people... I guess that was the original plot. Or the idea that it was going to be that way. But, you know, they definitely went a different route with it. Really, the only characters that you see besides Superman that are... I guess Superman canon characters are Superman, Lois Lane, and you get Perry White and Jimmy Olsen and Lana Lang, but everybody else is pretty much new to that film.
I do want
to
say Lana Lang was Annette O'Toole, who went on to play Clark's mom on Smallville, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I like that like little callback.
Yeah, I love it when they do stuff like that.
I like that too, yeah.
Much like in the first movie... when Lois Lane's mother was the Lois Lane from the old 50s show.
Yes.
Now that I've got those things out of the way, I can't think of another single movie in the history of my movie viewing where I had my hopes so shattered.
Really?
I love the first two Superman movies so much.
Well, let me just say this. I was going to say Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
I had no expectations. I'm not saying 4 is a terrible movie, and it's far worse than 3.
Okay.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying where the actual movie
where the bar
failed
was
to live up to my hope so much.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know. I'd
seen it at such an early age that I had not yet learned the lesson of keep your expectations low and you'll be pleasantly surprised. No, and it was I mean, little kid me didn't know blue comedian Richard Pryor. He only knew the Richard Pryor that he would see in like cut versions of. The
things
toy,
that would be
that. Right. So I loved Richard Pryor.
Oh yeah,
I was like, oh, he's gonna be in a Superman movie. Yeah, this is gonna be the greatest thing to ever happen.
Exactly. Right.
And then I get,
but they're
drunk Superman. I'm gonna
just say this though, the Superman fighting himself in the
Junkyard.
Junkyard. That's pretty good. That's pretty entertaining. Going to the crash, you know, trash compactors. I thought, you know, that to me is better than the supercomputer at the end.
Yeah, well, the supercomputer is just absolutely terrible.
That's, it is, yeah.
I don't even remember the junkyard scene because I literally have not watched this movie since I was 10 years old.
It was the hot kind of the highlight
of the movie. Yeah, because it's like bad Superman versus good Superman.
The only times that I've rewatched any part of it, I can only get to drunk Superman and I turn it off.
It was like Superman versus Clark Kent. You're like, why is Clark Kent still putting his, like, adjusting his glasses while he's playing?
I know.
He had a magnet fall on him, and then...
Yeah, like, and he gets crushed by that. Yeah.
Yeah, the supercomputer that actually had, like, the Atari game of Superman playing as, like, the missiles are shooting out.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that, too. Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, computers.
Yeah. When I seen it, I was like, oh, it's Richard Pryor. And, you know... It was Richard Pryor that I'd seen him, like you said, in the toy and like playing opposite of Gene Wilder. So it was like,
Silver Streak. Hear no evil, see no evil.
So, you know, I remember there's one part where he's with the bad guys up at like the top of this building and they're skiing. There's like snow.
He's off the building.
It's like, what?
And Richard Pryor's pretty good at it.
But the
ending is bad. The ending's bad.
Yeah, the ending's bad.
The beginning and the middle is nothing to write home about either. I'm crapping all over your ear.
That's all right. But I'm going to stand by this. Better than Superman 4.
We can say that.
The bar was set low, and Superman 4 went even lower.
Yeah.
Superman 4 is just bad.
It is. Even the effects in that movie.
I will say also, given the choice between watching Superman 3 right now and most of the Schumacher Batmans, I would choose Superman 3. Most of them, not all of them, but the Clooney one for sure.
The Clooney one is as far as superhero movies go that are really missed the mark. That one.
Bad.
The only good thing about that was Arnold Schwarzenegger as Mr. Freeze. Just I did like his character.
His puns
were pretty fun.
The chilling sound of your doom or something like that. You know, it's just
chill out.
Chill out. So yes, Superman 3. Chris has issues with it.
I have issues. that was all of my issues with Superman 3. So we're on to number 3 now?
Number 3.
I'm going to go with a 1994 movie with 46% approval rating. Natural Born Killers.
Oh,
really? Okay. Is it that low?
I didn't realize it was that low.
Based on a screenplay by Quentin Tarantino, directed by Oliver Stone, who apparently changed quite a bit about the screenplay.
Really?
And I didn't realize how much. I would like to see the original screenplay. But stars Woody Harrelson and Juliette Lewis as Mickey and Mallory Knox, a pair of killers who are on a... I believe it was it Route 666?
I think so, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're traveling down Route 666, killing people, on a crime spree. Pretty controversial. That might explain the low ratings.
Yeah, I could kind of see that,
And I have not watched this movie in a long time, but I really liked Quentin Tarantino movies.
I remember enjoying the movie when it came out. I own the movie.
I might.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I do.
I think
I owned it on VHS, to be honest with you.
Yeah, actually, no, I think I did too, actually.
But I watched it a lot.
Yeah, I did too. And that Robert Downey Jr. in it is awesome.
Yes, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, he's really good.
And then Rodney Dangerfield.
That's right, as her father.
Yeah.
And there were some interesting choices made where they did like flashbacks to her early life, like it was a sitcom.
And then things
were not funny. Like she was getting abused and stuff like that. Yeah. And, So at its heart, it's kind of a weird love story. It's kind of weird. It's hard to defend some of the choices that they make. It's really an attack on the media and the way they sensationalize violence.
Yeah, that's kind of how I've always felt it was as well. Just kind of like a, you know, a depiction of American culture.
How
do you know,
like violence?
Yeah. But I can see why it would be controversial and possibly low rating. Now that you mention it, because I do believe it was kind of received that way when it came out.
And in hindsight, it was making fun of the way the media glorifies violence, but at the same time, it was kind of glorifying violence.
Exactly. Right.
And I did not realize this until I was looking up information on the movie. There is a whole Wikipedia page of crimes committed in real life that has some sort of link to being inspired by natural born killers.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Really? Like a 13-year-old kid cut the head off of somebody else and said he wanted to be famous like the natural born killers.
Wow.
The Columbine shooters referred to April 20th as NBK Day.
Really?
In their journals and stuff.
Get out of here. I did not know that.
Yeah, so there's lots of.
All right, yeah. That's.
Yeah. There. I brought it down. I brought down the party.
Brought
down.
Yeah.
Sorry. I kind of wanted to get this one out of the way because I knew it would suddenly get depressing when I brought up the real crimes. But
and that's it. Now it makes me want to look that up on Wikipedia, though, and just kind of read and peruse.
Yeah, there was enough. I mean, there was enough on there that it was. I was like, oh.
Yeah. Or maybe. Yeah, maybe my opinion on the movie's changed now. I don't
know. Still stand by. It deserves at least a fresh rating.
Yeah.
But the performances in there were pretty good, and I like it whenever Quentin Tarantino movies tie into each other through characters.
Yeah.
Like, for example, in Reservoir Dogs, you have Vic Vega.
Yeah.
Who's the brother of Vincent Vega from Pulp Fiction. The detective in here, the psychopath detective.
Yeah.
Is Jack Scagnetti, whose brother is Seymour Scagnetti, who was Michael Madsen's parole officer that they talk about, like. In Reservoir Dogs.
Really? Wow. I didn't even know that connection.
So yeah, that's fun whenever things happen like that.
That is kind of cool. That, and like you said, that makes me want to kind of see what the original script
was. I do, yeah.
Yeah, because that's, you know, probably pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right.
That's a good story.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say about my number three.
Number three.
All right. My number three. Came out in 1989. It has a 38% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It is Roadhouse.
Roadhouse.
That's right.
I can't even understand that rating. Because, come on.
That made us look at Patrick Swayze in a different light.
That and Bouncers, the career of being a bouncer.
Exactly.
I mean, he was a legendary bouncer.
Him and Sam Elliott, Kelly Lynch, and guess what? WWE legend Terry Funk was in Roadhouse.
Was he?
Yes, he was one of the bad guys.
I have never watched the movie front to back, though. I think probably all the different times that I've seen parts of it, I've probably seen the whole movie.
But I don't think
that I've ever seen it front to back. But
yeah.
Terry Funk.
That's the Funkster.
Yeah, that is crazy. See, now I kind of want to watch it again just to see that.
Exactly.
Because that is a movie, though, like, whenever it's on.
Yeah.
You gotta watch it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You cannot change the channel.
I mean, Family Guy made a funny reference to it all the time, like Roadhouse.
Yeah. Dalton. Yep. And you know, just the whole premise of the movie, maybe it's so fantastic. You know, the guy's a legendary bouncer. Like,
right. Like
is that even a thing? Like, dude, I cannot name a bouncer. Yet he walks into the bar. That's Dalton.
They know.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Well, I heard you.
Not only that, but they knew Sam Elliott's character.
Right.
Too,
they were partners, like in different bars, and Sam Elliott's character is the one who mentored Patrick Swayze's character.
Yeah, yeah.
And why do bouncers need mentors?
Exactly, right? Yeah. So it takes place in a universe where the career of being a bouncer is something...
Is revered.
That's... And I'm sorry I'm taking over your...
I just found it kind of funny that the bar owner, was having trouble at his bar, and, I mean, basically the musicians were in a cage at the bar playing music.
Yeah.
Bottles breaking everywhere. And so, you know, Dalton comes in, and he straightens everything out, and then, the town rich guy is getting jealous and wants to take over everything, and... He brings in a guy.
Yeah, that's right.
Another guy that's not a bouncer, but more of an enforcer. And the whole battle between him and Patrick Swayze. And it's like...
I love how there's no cops in that movie.
There's no cops.
You don't need cops. You got bouncers.
That's true. So it's a universe.
You have revered legendary bouncers.
Exactly. In that universe, there's no cops, but revered legendary bouncers.
Exactly.
They're like gladiators.
So, if you're looking for a rocking good time and it's like Patrick Swayze, that's not in Ghost or Dirty Dancing, Roadhouse.
Still has the awesome mullet, though.
It still have the awesome mullet,
I believe that any movie that features Patrick Swayze with his mullet deserves automatic 50% just for that. The rest of the movie determines how far up the fresh scale goes.
Exactly. The mullet, right there, 50%.
So, you could have rotten movies with that were 50%, but that means everything else in the movie is terrible.
If you
have even some redeeming qualities, it should pull you up into the 60s or 70s.
So I wonder how 2-1 Foo would rate on that scale.
Does he have a mullet in that?
He's a cross-dresser.
Yeah.
Him and Wesley Snipes and John.
So it could be like a Martin Post.
Because if you take the full name of it, I will give it an automatic fresh rating because it's got Patrick Swayze, Wesley Snipes, and in addition to that, the full title of the movie is Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything, Love, Julie Newmar, who was Batgirl in the old Batman series.
Boom.
So,
comic book reference brought right back.
So automatic at least, I would say, at least 75%. It might be the first movie with 110% whenever we add. I don't know, I haven't seen it. So...
Roadhouse.
There you go. If you haven't seen it, you should watch it.
Yes.
All right, mine. We're on number three, right?
Number three.
All right. My number three is... This is the first movie I ever saw with JCVD in it, which is Jean-Claude Van Damme. And that movie would be Bloodsport. Came out in 1988. The whole premise of the movie is kind of essentially like a video game, I guess, where he's kind of going up to tiers and
so good.
I just love the movie, and it's one of those things where I can watch it anytime it's on. It's pretty horrible in general
because it used to come on all the time.
I used to be on all the time.
Yeah, like every Saturday.
Yeah,
every Saturday or Sunday afternoon movie would be Bloodsport.
Bloodsport. Yeah, Jean-Claude Van Damme plays the American martial artist that was in the military, going to fight in what they call a blood sport, which was basically a gladiatorial type of combat where they're fighting each other and, sometimes to the death, not really. It was more or less whoever knocked the other person out.
I don't think, it wasn't usually intentional.
Yeah,
it
wasn't
to the death.
Exactly.
To the pain.
Yeah, to the pain, yes. And you had, he plays Frank Dukes, a couple times in the movie, they reference, put up your Dukes. And Bolo Yeun is in it from, he played the main villain in the film, and he was in some Bruce Lee films.
Okay.
He played, I believe, in Enter the Dragon, and...
I will never forget his name in the movie, only because I went to high school with a kid who didn't really look like him, but looked enough like him that we called him Chong Li. He encouraged it. It wasn't there goes Chong Li. He really didn't look like him. I don't know. I don't know why exactly it was, but he encouraged us and we did. We called him Chong Li. Whatever. I sat by him in American history class.
And then, you know that guy.
He faked a seizure on the day of a substitute teacher.
Oh my gosh!
Wow. He was pretty fun. He was a character.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and if he wants to be called Chun-Li, that's
there. You go.
Even more so. But not the best English speaker.
No, he spoke English. Oh, you mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not your boy,
yeah. Not your Chun-Li, the movie Chun-Li.
But I also want to, just so it doesn't sound like I'm a blatant racist or something. my Chun-Li was not Asian.
He was not Asian.
No. Okay, yeah. So it wasn't like.
I don't know if that's better.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what that means.
Well, I don't want to be like, oh, look, there was an Asian kid in my high school, and we called him Chun-Li.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah. You know, yeah. I could see your point, I guess. Oh, man. But
once every podcast, Sam becomes embarrassed to be near me.
Yeah, Chun-Li, though, the one line, I remember, he says in the movie, in the first, probably the first 100 times that I saw the movie, I wasn't sure exactly what he said, until I watched it with subtitles, and it happens when Jean-Claude Van Damme breaks that brick.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys know where I'm going with this or not. But
I haven't seen it in a long time, but I love the movie.
Okay, because you know he does the death mock or something. The death touch is basically what it translates to or whatever. So he breaks Jean-Claude Van Damme breaks a brick at the bottom of a stack of bricks. You know, the brick explodes and everything. Impressive. Everyone's like, oh, applauding, you know, cheering and everything. And then Chun-Li says, "Brick not hit back." And I think he shakes his fist, and he's the, you know, like I said, the first 100 times I saw the movie, I had no idea what he said, and then when I saw the subtitles, oh, he's saying, oh, the brick doesn't hit back. Okay, I get it. So, yeah, that's my my little takeaway from that movie, and I don't want to stop talking about it without mentioning Ogre being in the movie too.
Ogre, yeah,
you know.
Before we go any further, I just want to say that it was not until just now that when I'm looking at the IMDb cast that Forrest Whitaker was in there.
Forrest Whitaker? Oh, yeah, he was. I forgot about that, too.
He wasn't Forrest Whitaker then, I guess.
Yeah. He was one of the agents that was trying to bring Frank Dukes back.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want him to be hurt. So, all right, that's my number three.
All right. So you're moving on to Deuce?
Not to Deuce. It's Deuce territory.
It's time for the Deuce.
When we were coming up with this list, there's only one movie that I can compare to Deuce. A Summer's Deuce.
A Summer's Deuce.
Shall I compare thee to a Summer's Deuce? And that is the 1988 classic, quite possibly one of the greatest films ever made.
Oh, man.
Hell Comes to Frogtown.
Oh! That's the movie that launched Roddy Piper's career, right? I don't know if it launched it, but
it left the launch pad. Yeah.
I mean, in fairness, you start with Hell Comes to Frogtown. You move on to They Live. Where do you go from this?
Yeah, this is true.
So,
this is true.
I mean, at this point.
This is true, yeah.
For those of you who don't know the plot, allow me to share it. It's a post-apocalyptic world. Nuclear weapons have wiped out the vast majority of the population and made most of the population sterile. So when someone is fertile, they are a treasured commodity, and there is no one more fertile than Rowdy Roddy Piper's character.
It should surprise no one.
Who has left a string of pregnancies in his wake. And he's finally captured, and the government takes him in. Now, the government is all a bunch of female nurses. And they strap a device to his crotch. Where if he gets too far away from the agent's earring, it will begin to cause electric shocks to enter his nethers, I guess.
Wow.
So he has to stay as part of this prisoner. And he's told if he tries to remove it, there's 1 ounce of C4 inside of it. And it will go off. So he has to leave the machine on. Now there's a flap. And immediately, because he's Rowdy Roddy Piper, immediately one of the female soldiers attempts to seduce him. And he's okay with it.
Yeah.
But then it doesn't go well. Long story short, the whole plot is they have to break into Frogtown, which is where the reptilian mutants live.
Okay.
And they don't break into Frogtown. They go there because it's like the Mos Eisley of the post-apocalypse. It's scum and villainy and all this good stuff. Mr. Toady, the boss guy, has stolen a group of virgins, and they're there. So they're all fertile. So they have to go and rescue them so that Rowdy Roddy Piper can sleep with them and impregnate them. And if that is not Oscar worthy, I do not know what is.
There you go. Yeah. I mean,
and what was the Rotten Tomatoes score on it?
40%.
40%.
Wow.
Which just means it has a higher percentage than Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, and Suicide Squad.
Wow.
Yes. The movie's actually awful. It's it's only fun because it's only a good because it's fun to watch, and it's bad. It's so bad that it's fun. It's one of those. It is not good. The trailer, if you get a chance to watch the trailer, it'll give you an idea of how bad it is, but no, it's worse. I watched it once a long time ago, and I rewatched it today, and woo.
Yeah.
It's bad, and yeah, it is just such a strange concept to choose to make a 2-hour movie out of, or an hour and a half, or however long it was. It's just so strange that you're like, it's supposed to, it's like Mad Max meets Losing It. It's so weird. It's just a weird concept. And I would also like to point out that it was written by a dude named Randall Frakes. And you may not be familiar with him, but he I think they might have been film students kind of together, okay, created a short movie called Xenogenesis, which kind of launched their career into Hollywood. And he used it, you know, to work on some films with his partner, and then went off to make Hell Comes to Frogtown. And his partner went on to make Terminator, Terminator 2, True Lies. So his partner was James Cameron, who almost helped make this movie.
Oh, man.
Wow, that's crazy.
That's dodging a bullet.
Yeah. So he actually worked on it. He helped write True Lies. He helped do some... He worked on Terminator in various sound effects, because they did all the things. So,
right.
But it's pretty cool.
Wow.
So, terrible movie. Watch it. He was the guy that wrote it said he was actually embarrassed the first time he watched it. He said because the way the first time he saw it with an audience, he's like, I thought, there goes my career.
Everybody's got to start somewhere.
He goes,
right?
And they had a special screening here recently at a theater. He says, and everybody laughed at the parts that were supposed to be funny. And he realizes now, he said, at the time it was supposed to be like a $300,000 movie, and they gave it like $3 million to make it. So. They changed a bunch and didn't let him put in. He says it was supposed to be just a stupid movie, and they toned it way down. So, like, yeah, I won't even talk about that, but it was supposed to be even more outlandish.
Wow.
Yeah. I want to see that movie.
Yeah. Like, that would be interesting to see.
I just want you to know I would rewatch this movie. before I would rewatch Superman 3.
Well, man, it does have Roddy Piper.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, exactly. And that's that's what stays. Anyone else in that role, and I probably would not. Yeah, this movie would not have made my list.
Yeah,
that's pretty much why I know that's that movie. Pretty
much, it's got Piper in it. All right, we'll watch it again.
Mm. Yeah, to I'm just gonna say this: if you were to give me a gun and two bullets and put me in a room with a VH copy of Superman 3, Adolf Hitler, and Osama bin Laden, I would shoot Superman 3 twice. I ripped that joke off of someone else. That's an internet
that's
thing.
That's still out.
In my defense, Adolf Hitler and Osama bin Laden are already dead.
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
So how do you feel about Superman 4?
Yeah, that's... man.
Alrighty then.
Pretty terrible.
Alright, my number two, The Deuce.
The Deuce.
This movie was in 1986. This movie also received a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. This movie is called Rad.
Oh, man.
It starred Bill Allen, Lori Loughlin. You may know her as Rebecca from Full House.
I do know her as Rebecca from Full House.
Yes. And also... the 1984 Olympic gold medalist in gymnastics, Bart Connor.
Bart Connor. And I know this, I've not seen this movie, but Sam did show me just a wonderful clip. And Bart Connor has the perfect Johnny from Karate Kid haircut.
Exactly. The movie is about a local BMX racer who's played by Billy Allen. And he wants to compete in this big bike tournament to win money and sponsorship. His mother wants him to... the race is on the same day that the SATs, the last time he could take the SATs to go to college, is on. And so he is struggling with that and... he chooses to go into the race, but the person who is sponsoring the race is a corrupt businessman who keeps changing the rules and not trying to let the hero in. And Bart Connors, he plays like he's someone of the bad guy. He's another BMX racer, famous BMX racer that gets shipped in to race in this contest. And, you know, they kind of have like a kind of a rivalry of this underdog trying to overcome all the odds and everything. And what made this movie stand out to me is two things. Well, actually, three things. One, it was basically, you know, the 80s was basically the start of the BMX movement. We didn't have the X Games. We didn't really have... all these extreme Rob Dyrdek, Fear Factory stuff. We had BMX was just coming into its own. It was kind of cool seeing all these people on bikes, and you could thought to yourself as a kid, hey, I could do that if I put some bars on my wheels.
I get some pegs on her, man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And be able to, you know, jump hills and everything. Do little tricks. There is a dance scene with Laura and Bill. Where they bring in their bikes and they do BMX tricks while to the song of Send Me an Angel by Real Life. So I thought that was just kind of funny, and
that gets an automatic 60% right there. The scene you showed me.
Exactly. Yep.
I mean, she's in heels on a BMX bike doing tricks and standing on her hands while the bike is going around on the dance floor.
I mean, if that doesn't woo your woman, what does? Right?
A woman that can, you know, ride a BMX bike like that is a woman I kind of like.
She's a keeper.
Right? Yeah,
she's a keeper.
Exactly.
So, Rad, 1986. You should check it out, especially the dance scene. It is memorable.
You can find it on YouTube, right?
You can find it on YouTube. So look it up. Rad, 1986, dance scene.
I just I want to say that since I had not, you know, we share our lists beforehand in general, so we get an idea of, so we don't get repeats. And I had not heard of Rad.
Yeah.
So I did some research on it just to see what it was. And I immediately, A, wanted to watch it. And B, it is the highest discrepancy between the critics versus the viewers on yes. Rotten Tomatoes.
Yes.
The 0% positive rating there, 91% of the audience enjoyed it. So
it's a good movie, and it came out of kind of around the same time as or a little bit, maybe a year or two after The Legend of Billie Jean King. So it kind of had that same feel to it.
It's just The Legend of Billie Jean. Billie Jean King, the tennis player.
Oh, wow, yeah. Legend of Billie Jean.
Yeah,
you can make that happen, too.
I can make that happen, too.
That's awesome.
I was in tennis.
The Legend of Serena Williams. But. The 80s movies, they always take something that like nobody would ever find offensive and turn it into this, like, oh, look, he's a rebel because he's on BMXs or Footloose. He's a rebel because he wants to dance.
Yeah, he dances. Or,
when he gets angry, he dances.
Yeah.
He dance fights.
There's always, always something.
Oh, man. All right, well, I guess that's
a good deuce.
That's a good deuce. That was a good deuce. My deuce is... This is one of the first incarnations of this character being presented in film format. And the character I'm referring to is Frank Castle, the Punisher.
Oh!
So, yes. The movie I'm talking about is Dolph Lundgren's Punisher. Came out in 1989. And, It's an enjoyable movie.
It has ninjas.
It has ninjas in it.
Every
movie should have ninjas in it. This is correct. The movie itself takes a little bit of a departure from the normal Frank Castle origin that we know of. He at no point in the film does he have a skull, bulletproof skull vest on or anything like that. There's lots of violence though. There's knives that have the famous Punisher skull, death head on it. That's pretty much the reference that you see in the film. The movie itself has Dolph Lundgren, as I said, playing the role of Frank Castle. It also has Louis Gossett Jr. in it, who plays a police officer in the film. Interestingly enough, you had mentioned Terminator 2 and the other Terminator movies. The person that directed this movie, Mark Goldblatt, also edited and worked on the Terminator and Terminator 2, which is kind of a weird coincidence.
Wow.
But the movie itself, it's not great. The score it received on Rotten Tomatoes was a 28%. It's probably deserving of that, I guess. It is kind of a low-budget film. But as, you know, being a Punisher fan growing up, it was the first time I got to see the Punisher in a movie, in live action, and I thought it was great.
I do remember seeing that movie, and I was like, oh, ninjas. I think isn't there a scene where... like, the bad guys are, like, sliding down somewhere, and, like, the Punisher's just shooting
them. Yeah, there's pretty much... Yeah.
I don't remember the film. I know I had to have seen it, but I don't remember it. I just remember his really black hair.
Yeah, I guess that's the other thing we should probably mention. You know, Dolph Lundgren doesn't normally have black hair. The Punisher character does have black hair. So, in this instance, they dyed his hair black. You know, I guess the opposite of what they did for Constantine, where they just kept, you know, Keanu Reeves' hair color the way it is. Now they dyed Dolph Lundgren's hair, and
yeah,
and
it was distracting to me.
It was a little strange, yeah.
But He's a genius. Did you know that?
I did know that. Yeah. Like
he graduated with a master's degree in chemical engineering from MIT.
Yeah. I think he used that reference in The Expendables 2.
I think he did. You know what? I think you're right. I think did not he see did.
The Expendables 2. So.
It's it, there. You know, Expendables movies are actually pretty entertaining. I don't know what their Rotten Tomato score is like, but it's those. I enjoy those movies. Yeah, we have to exactly. Yeah, I don't know. Hey. I might have to look that up real quick. Right. I guess that's not my number two. So
there's your deuce.
There's the deuce.
You're
just black haired deuce. Are we moving on to number one?
Yep.
Yes,
number
we are.
Number one.
My number one is not by any means a low rated movie. It scored a 55%. But I.
It's right on the cusp.
It is not without flaws. But I don't think the things that I think are flaws are what caused the movie to get its 55% rating. And that's 2013's Man of Steel.
Ah.
Certified rotten.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that rating either. I mean, Man of Steel I don't think is a great film.
No.
But I
But, I mean, it's no Superman 3.
It is no Superman 3. It is no Superman 3. I mean, it definitely had some missteps, but in general...
I didn't care too much about the Krypton stuff. I mean, I did, but I didn't. I thought it was strange that they chose to spend so much time on Krypton.
Yeah.
I hated the way they portrayed Pa Kent.
Yeah, that's...
And his death was the most useless death in cinematic history that I can think of.
Oh, exactly.
So there's a lot of things wrong with it. But overall, I thought it was a good movie. I thought that it,
I actually kind of like it a little bit better than Batman versus Superman.
Yeah, I do too.
I do too, but to me, it just brought the Clark Kent as this depressing guy.
Well, like, at least he wasn't the stalker that he was in BBS, Superman Lives.
BBS?
No.
Or you mean...
The Superman Returns. Superman Returns.
Superman Returns. Oh, yeah.
But he comes at that. I think he kind of brings back the stalkerish in Batman vs. Superman.
Yeah, but not to the point where he's spending time outside the window watching her sleep. That was creepy.
Uh-huh.
And so, I guess what bothers me about its low rating is I thought that it was decent. It was an overall good movie. And I will say that the editor at Rotten Tomatoes said that he was, I think his quote was, he was never more surprised at a negative rating than he was by Man of Steel.
I know a lot of people have a number of issues with it. As far as the ending where he kills Zod.
Yeah.
I didn't have as much of an issue with that. I had more of an issue, I guess, with the way he lets Pa Kent kind of die.
Well, Pa Kent didn't need to die.
Yeah, and that's...
If the tornado would have ran over him, he would have just been, you know, three blocks over.
Exactly, yeah. And it's just, like, I think it kind of takes away a little bit of the Superman character, because, you know, how he's died in previous stories, it's, you know, he's had a heart attack or something. He couldn't be saved.
Right.
You know, despite, you know, Superman having all these powers.
Not just his death, it's Pa stuff. Kent... encourage him not to use his powers to help people.
They
messed up Pa Kent a lot. They messed up a couple other things, and I do have a problem with him killing Zod at the end when there's other methods available to stop him. I mean, realistically,
yeah,
putting your hands over his eyes, you know,
this,
impervious
this
to the heat rays, so yeah.
It was a weird choice for them to do that, I thought. Seemed a little unusual.
I thought it was a little unusual, but, I mean, I guess it's just a harsher way than what Superman did in Superman 2, just let him fall into the abyss of the Fortress of Solitude.
Well, yeah, you know, and I have an issue with Superman 2's ending, too, because Lois Lane should not be a cold-blooded killer where she just punches the girl into the giant ravine,
yeah.
crevasse, if you will.
That is true, too. Yeah,
hey,
yeah.
I'm a reporter, and I don't like you, lady, so...
Yeah.
You've got the same power as me now.
She just happened to be there, so she wanted to get her punch in, because she tried to punch before, and her didn't her, like,
break hurt her hand. Yeah, or hurt her hand.
So she's like.
So I had a problem with so much destruction at the end. I heard someone else, and I think it was Max Landis, say this, and I'm not sure, it might have been Max Landis, but when I see Zod and Superman fighting, I don't want to see them punch one and the guy go flying. I want to see giant thunderous punches and them take it.
That's something we didn't see, actually. It was exactly what you were saying. They punch him and he flies through a building or something.
I want
like
Superman
that.
To be tough enough to take that punch.
Yeah.
And you know, wow, Zod's so strong that he can bruise him up, or it's like two people fighting normally, but you know, with
super
shock waves coming off of their punches or things like that.
Yeah. Like maybe windows breaking from the sheer impact, something like that.
Yeah,
I could see that. Yeah,
yeah, but, like I said, it was the whole I'm depressed, Clark Kent walking around, and it's kind of like, dude, seriously, what are you depressed about?
But he was more like that, I think, in BBS, which I think is, you know, I think he became more of the emo Superman in BVS than he was in Man of Steel. I mean, I'm not saying that there wasn't that in Man of Steel, but I think
they had like a whole thing with the Alaska and everything on that.
Well, But I mean, in the, like BVS, I think they just took it to the next level and just made him, I don't know, just didn't make him Superman.
No, he was just gloomy and everything. Like, dude. So that was good choice.
Yeah, I don't agree with the rating being that low, but.
Is better than BBS, so
this is true. This is true.
All right, my number one.
Oh, I just wanted to mention, I did look up the Expendables while we were talking, and the first Expendables is a 41% on Rotten Tomatoes. Ooh, the second one is a 66%.
Interesting.
Strange, isn't it? Yeah.
That's another example. You know, when I think sequels that are better than the original, I think The Godfather Part 2, potentially.
Right.
Empire Strikes Back. And The Expendables 2.
That's... There you go.
Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom. I like Raiders.
I like Raiders. Raiders. I do like... I like Last Crusade better than Raiders.
Mine goes Raiders, Temple, and...
Mine goes Last Kingdom Crusade. Of the Crystal Skull.
Yes.
What's Kingdom of the Crystal Skull? I don't even know what that movie is.
That movie exists.
It's a fan film.
A fan film.
Yeah.
I like Highlander 2 too.
Wow, I can't wait for the second Highlander to come out.
All right, my number one, 1985. This movie also had a 0% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. It is America Ninja.
Classic.
What was the rating again?
It was zero.
Zero. Zero.
It was rated.
Michael Dudikoff.
Wow.
And Stephen James. It is about a U.S. Army private who has kind of amnesia, who has to rescue the colonel's daughter from corrupt military officials, and
I was picturing Colonel Sanders when you said the colonels. That was making me laugh. Gotta say the colonels. From evil chicken farmers trying to take his recipe.
Which are ninjas also.
Trying to steal his 13 herbs and spices.
So evil corrupt military personnel and a secret ninja organization. And when this movie came out, I can watch this movie over and over again, because especially with the Stephen James character, he was this big black dude who was like a corporal and was actually Michael's like corporal, and they get into this fight where he's like, you're not a man and blah blah blah, and all of a sudden, you know, Michael is, he's like, he has amnesia, he doesn't realize, hey, I'm kind of a ninja. I got ninja training. So throughout the movie, they found out that he was trained by the special ninja master, and basically the corrupt military personnel tries to put him in jail, tried to kill him, and he's trying to figure out who he is, and this big scene with a whole bunch of ninjas come out fighting, and I remember me and my friends would spend hours pretending that we were American ninjas. So it spawned off, I'm going to say, 4 more sequels, which are pretty cool.
At least four sequels.
So yeah, my number one is American Ninja.
All right.
I want to say that from about 1982, somewhere about 1990, that was the golden age of ninjas.
Yes.
There was ninjas
everywhere.
Exactly.
You never saw a ninja in the 70s.
No.
But suddenly, somewhere around the lines, everyone decided that ninjas were the way to go.
Were the thing, yeah.
I mean, Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow.
Snake Eyes. Yep. I mean, ninjas in video games. Ninja Gaiden.
Yeah.
Shinobi.
Shinobi. Yeah.
Such a great question.
that is probably the pinnacle of the ninja in video games.
I'm going to put this out here. I want a t-shirt for, I think it was called Revenge of Shinobi. You had to take Polaroids of your screen and send in the time it took you to finish it. And if you were in the top 10 in the country, you got a t-shirt.
So you were in the top 10.
Yeah, so number one got a Marvel... you know what? It wasn't Shinobi. I was a master at Shinobi. I didn't win anything from Shinobi. It was the Spider-Man Genesis game that I...
Spider-Man is kind of like a super-powered ninja. Yeah.
The Revenge of Shinobi was awesome, though, because it had a fake Batman in it as one of the end bosses that turned into a Spider-Man. Yeah, there's.
Really?
Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't get sued.
Oh man!
I'm sorry, I got my video games mixed up.
That's all right. Interesting.
It was 30 years ago, so.
Yeah, that's an acceptable mistake.
Yeah.
Speaking of 30 years ago, but I guess we'll go to my number one. And this one is probably the one that I kind of have the most issues with as far as Rotten Tomatoes scores go, because I cannot believe that it got the score that it got. And the score that it got is a 30%, a paltry 30%.
What?
And the movie I'm talking about is The Cannonball Run from 1981. Just the sheer star power alone that's in this movie should skyrocket it past, the bottom of the tier Rotten Tomato standards. Because we're talking Burt Reynolds' mustache.
alone.
80%.
80%, right? So we got Burt Reynolds in this movie, Dom DeLuise.
80% Dom DeLuise automatic.
right, exactly. Roger Moore, one of the most underrated James Bonds. We got Farrah Fawcett, Dean Martin.
What?
Sammy Davis Jr., Adrian Barbeau, Jackie Chan.
Oh.
Burt Convy, Jamie Farr.
Of Hollywood Squares.
Exactly. If you know Hollywood Squares, you know
Burt Convy.
We got Peter Fonda.
Did you say Jamie Farr?
I did say Jamie Farr.
Yeah, Ohio's own Jamie Farr.
Jamie Farr. There you go. But yeah, the movie I think is a classic, and I cannot believe that it scored this low on it. The basic premise of the film, it's an illegal cross-country road race, and it's just the characters that are in it are just, pretty memorable. I remember watching this movie as a kid and just loving every moment of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's, introduced me to Jackie Chan, for crying out loud.
It introduced me to the Lamborghini.
I
had never seen a Lamborghini prior to that movie.
I believe it. Captain Chaos was played by
Dom DeLuise,
which I thought was, as a kid, I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's Captain Chaos. Da, 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 doing that whole thing. But
is Dom DeLuise still alive?
No.
I think he did die. His son's alive, though.
Yeah. Peter DeLuise. Yeah, from 21 Jump Street?
21 Jump Street, that's right.
I gotta find out when Dom DeLuise died.
But yeah, no, I love this movie, and I think one of my favorite things about the movie was not necessarily the movie itself, but like the end credits, because they show all the outtakes that they did while they were filming, like all the mistakes. Oh, yeah. And it just, for whatever reason, that's just so memorable to me, because I think it's like the first time I've ever seen that in a movie, and I'm like, oh, that's awesome, where you can just see them messed up, and you know, but.
You know it's based on an actual race.
I do know that. Yeah, I do. I don't know about the Captain Chaos character, though.
It was.
But the I think they call it the Cannonball Run, I believe, though. I think there is some different name.
I read it was held like 3 times in the 70s.
Is that,
and the dude that wrote the movie organized the race.
Did he really? I did not know that.
So
yeah, but yeah, like 30% on Rotten Tomatoes, totally not deserving.
Wow.
So yeah,
Cannonball Run 2.
Cannonball Run 2 is also very good. We see the return of, I think, pretty much all
of most those, of them. I don't think you said her name. I don't remember the chick from
Adrienne Barbeau.
Yeah, from Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
I don't think
Farrah Fawcett's in it too. I don't know if I mentioned her name.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't think she did make a return in it either.
I think Catherine Bach from Dukes of Hazzard, Daisy Duke.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, I think you're right. She was in Cannonball Run 2. That's right.
From Warren, Ohio.
We're getting a lot of Ohio love right now.
That's right.
I'm just going to say that 1980 me would have loved to have received Ohio love from Catherine Bach.
And that's understandable.
I had quite the crush on Daisy Duke.
Yes.
But yeah, Cannonball Run. I don't understand the low rating.
That's a really weird rating right there. So
that was your...
Numero uno. Yeah.
Your R. Kelly Memorial.
R. Kelly Memorial.
Number one.
All right. Well, is there anything else we want to mention? I don't think there's no new trailers. I don't think really that we haven't mentioned already.
Nope. I don't believe so.
I guess that's it then.
Yep.
All right. Well, check us out on allmyissues.com.
Our Facebook.
Our Gmail. Allmyissues@gmail.com.
Twitter @allmyissues. And I think that's about it.
So
thanks for listening.
See you guys later.
Later.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.